baby, who the hell was that?
And she goes, and the brother goes, that's my sister. And she's a whole lot of woman. Hello, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxtay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Keep calm and carry on, so the feigned slogan goes, or so I now realise. Here on Worst Foot Forward, we slightly misheard the instructions as keep clams and carrion, and now we're up to our necks in shellfish and decaying buffalo flesh. And as the vultures circle overhead, alongside me is my co-host, partner in crime, and fellow main course, Ben Vanderbilt.
I think I would just be an amuse-bouche for a vulture.
An amuse-bouche.
An amuse-bouche.
Yeah, it's just, would you spread you on like a little tiny cracker, pop it in its mouth.
Okay, talk me through this. How is a vulture spreading something on a cracker? Because they do not have opposable thumbs.
True. But the ones in Dumbo are quite clever.
There aren't vultures in Dumbo. No.
They're crows.
They're crows. Yeah.
There are vultures
in the Jungle Book.
Jungle Book. The ones in the Jungle Book are quite nifty. I reckon they could wield a shiv.
They were so indecisive. They couldn't even decide what they wanted to do.
They wouldn't know whether to spread Ben on a cracker or just pop him in whole.
I mean...
Are you already laughing at being popped in whole?
No, I'm rising.
That's got to be a new record.
We spent a lovely evening together last night with Ben giggling at the word stopcock every time I came up a conversation.
The word stopcock is legitimately hilarious, but only if we can find a use for the word go-cock as well.
If there's a stopcock, there's got to be a go-cock.
There's got to be a go-cock. I just want to
tap. A tap.
A tap is a go-cock.
A tap is a go-cock.
Yeah, but you never want to hear
an old
child...
English term for a go-cock.
Dad, the go-cock's stuck again.
She was originally called Farah Go-cock-nator.
We've already heard the dulcet tones of our guest, so I should introduce them. Our guest this week... I'll start that again. Our guest this week is a hugely talented stand-up comedian and radio presenter. He has supported Stephen K. Amos on tour. He has wowed audiences at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with his show Roots. Even more excitingly, he has appeared in the film Pan as a pirate. We were taking sweepstakes last night on whether you were pirate 1, 2, 3, 4 or 5.
Yes.
He is a presenter on Soho Radio and one of the core members of the wonderful Angel comedy team who created the unique venue, the Bill Murray in Islington. It is the wonderful Mr. Masood Mailas.
Oh, thank you. That is probably the best intro I've ever had.
Thanks,
in my life.
That's pride really ourselves nice. On good intros. That's the one thing we do well.
Considering I've introduced you professionally within the least month, that is a sick burn on
me. All right. So I'm sorry.
You've raised your game since then. Yeah.
Yes, mate.
Really hit. That was good.
What number pirate were you?
Well, so technically we weren't numbered, but I would like to say I'm number 34 because there was a lot of us. Yeah. I'm in the film for about 3 seconds. Three visible, like as in like, hey, there I am, and then never seen again. We watched it with my cousin and my girlfriend Sarah. We watched the film, and the film itself isn't bad, but
some of the pirates.
I was a great pirate, of course. I was number one. But
do you think they couldn't number the pirates too many because pirates don't really have enough fingers and toes to count up very high?
Yeah, I think they're not really on the numerical system. Either.
Yeah,
then again though, when they share out booty, and I can't believe that. I mean money.
Considering, and we'll reveal it now, this week's podcast is about the world's worst blaxploitation movie. So the fact that you spoke about sharing out booty absolute delight. I'm on point.
It's my next point. We're linking. We're slowly getting there from pirates to blaxploitation.
Yeah.
Now that would be a film I'd like to see, a blaxploitation pirate film. That would be fantastic. I don't think it's happened.
I think you'd definitely write it with you know your pirate cred that you now have.
Oh, now yeah, that the one film I was in for about 5 seconds. Yeah. Oh,
did you have a cutlass?
I did have a cutlass, and I had one of those guns, those weird, but it didn't shoot. It was like a rubber gun. But they taught us...
You had a rubber gun. That's not what you want in the Caribbean, is it?
No, it's just going to melt. It's just, they taught us, like, some combat, like, fighting, and they taught us how to shoot the gun. None of us ever shot it, but they taught us how to do it. Because they're like, well, we have some spare time, so teach them how to shoot the gun. It was kind of fun, actually, although I was never ever picked to be a fighting pirate. And any scenes that were fighting pirates...
You're a lover pirate, not a
pirate. Oh, yeah, I'm not.
That's why he's chasing the booty. So, clearly, we know you're fantastic at making piratical noises. What are you the worst at in the world?
Probably saying... I'd probably say... This is a very niche thing. Probably saying no to things I should say no to. Yeah. As in, like, I've been in jobs where people have been, like... I'll give you, like, an example of what I mean. Like, any authority figure that is, like, that wants me to do something, I will probably say yes to. And I shouldn't do that all the time. So, like, I was working in a cafe, and this guy... lived opposite the cafe, and like there was some weird, he was dating somebody who worked there or something. Anyway, turns out he had to move out of his house and he was living opposite the cafe. So he asked me and someone else to move his stuff out of his house for him. And I was like, well, I shouldn't say no because he might fire me. I'm like, yeah, but he doesn't work here. He has zero authority. I'm like, yeah, but I should probably do that. I should probably, because I don't want to appear like a bad person. He's like, yeah, but is he paying you? No. But I should do it.
So. Hence why you're a self-employed comedian.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of bad choices. And something that my mom actually pointed out to me. She said, the problem with you is you don't know how to say no. I'm like, yeah, that's... Wait. hang on a second.
This week's podcast is all about the world's worst blaxploitation movie.
Ben and I are obviously complete experts in this area. Oh.
I mean, you guys don't have to be experts. Well, you should, no.
we should point out, this sort of came out of a conversation me and Masood had. We were gigging together in Zurich last month, and I can't remember why we started chatting about it. Very possibly because on stage and sometimes off stage, Masood very much resembles a blaxploitation cop. But not in his behaviour. Clearly, you're the fucking patsy in your behaviour.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all an act. I'm both the good cop and bad cop in my life. I'm both the pushover guy, like, no, maybe you should. You want to get a coffee? Let's go get a coffee. Then I'll go out and then I'll come back in and be like, where are the drugs?
He is sporting excellent hair, sideburns, and did arrive in a trench coat.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, with some wah-wah music behind
him. Yeah, I don't know who those guys are. Yeah. They just sort of followed me from the station.
Yeah, Masood doesn't actually wear shoes. He's just got two wah-wah pedals on his feet, like flip-flops, that he uses to go everywhere.
I don't know who these guys are.
Ben, you're going to kick us off, aren't you?
Yes, I am. No, because I don't really know too much about blaxploitation movies, and I don't know whether you, dear listener, will know much about them. A little bit of background. So, from my research, the first blaxploitation movie is credited as being Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. That is badass spelt with three A's and five S's.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of... excess that blaxploitation movies are known for. We're going to come back to that in a minute because I did a little bit of research and went all the way back and wondered who was the first African-American hero in literature.
Oh, that's a good
one. In 1746, a slave called Lucy Terry wrote a ballad called Bars Fight, and it was basically describing when some Indians had attacked the family that owned her in Massachusetts and stole her away and stole the family away. And they were enslaved and taken to Montreal, which is one hell of a journey.
Yeah.
The first real story that was written, rather than a poem, was by a guy called Victor Sejour. And it's fascinating because it's actually written... He was a French-speaking black guy because it was down in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And the story's called Le Mulatto. And so mulatto is basically a fairly unpleasant old word for being mixed race. And it's described as a gothic revenge tale revolving around the psychological conflicts of a mulatto searching for the identity of his father.
Wow. That's crazy cool. I want to read the hell out of that. That sounds amazing.
If I can fact check you with my English literature degree, there's a short story by our Afro Ben called Orinoco from the 1680s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, about an African prince who is tricked into slavery and sold to British colonists in Suriname.
Oh, and who's it by?
Afra Ben.
Who's that?
She is often credited as being the first professional female writer. She's phenomenal.
Wow.
In the 1690s, yeah. She was a playwright, poet, translator, essayist.
And where was she from? Where did she live?
She was English. And I can't quite remember this thing, the whole plot of the story, because it's about 12 years since I studied it, but yeah.
There's a lot of similarities coming up here. The person gets threatened to be a slave. Yeah. He's had 12 years. Story of a similar nature.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating reading this story and other stuff. There are so many tropes that carry through to blaxploitation, and then because Quentin Tarantino loves to nick tropes from there, the stuff that I recognise straight away. But this,
as well as which, there's the whole thing about people going, there just aren't these heroes in the canon. That's because no one's put these stories in canon. These stories are there if people go looking for them.
Absolutely. It's funny how and this might be a point you're getting to with blaxploitation, is that the kind of explosion of it in the 70s at least was this thing of, like, obviously there being not very much black cinema at the time. And they were sort of like, well, who are the heroes? Who are the people that representing us? And, like, a lot of the reason that a lot of the people are, like, you know, either gangbangers or drug dealers or pimps, it's because at the time, unfortunately, those were the jobs that black people held at the time. That, like, you know, and so they kind of became heroes. And obviously, that very extreme thing of fighting whitey, it was a big part of it. But it was interesting, like, how culturally at the time that's how they felt to represent themselves. So I think it's interesting, like you're saying about canon, is like that was what they felt at the time was canonical to them.
Yeah.
They were like, this is our story right now. This is what we feel would empower us.
Yeah.
It's just kind of weird. It's interesting. But like you said, you know, they're out there. You just got to go find them.
Yeah. Well, it's also like black cinema in the 70s reflected the story of the civil rights movement. If you look at, like, the big black heroic actor of the 60s, I think it's Sidney Poitier.
Yes.
And he's got sort of a dignity and a respectability to him. And admittedly, he takes no shit.
Yeah, exactly.
There's that famous scene in The Heat of the Night where
he
slaps the white cop.
I
feel like he's part of the Martin Luther King part of the civil rights movement.
Yes.
Whereas blaxploitation grows out of Malcolm X and the Black Panthers, and we are not getting the shit that we want, so we're going to start getting violent.
I would agree with that. That's what it totally feels like. And then in all of the films that you watch, that's exactly what it feels like. It feels very much like, hey, we got to get what we want.
Yeah.
We're going to take it.
Yeah.
I think that's what kind of makes them quite fun as well. Is like,
it gives them their big brash in your face sort of feeling, because they're going, they're making huge statements. They're shouting louder than anyone else so they can be noticed, I guess.
And even the filmic style of them reflects that too, because it is, again, it's that very 70s. You know, there's certain sort of 70s style of filming where they have, there's a lot of stuff that's off tripod and all these kind of low angle, quite close shots of people.
Yeah.
And that there's a horrible angle. I don't hate it, but it's in every or most 70s films. Monty Python does it quite a lot as well in their films, where they have the camera kind of just under their chin, and then and I think it's done in ADR, but the noises they're making are these kind of real guttural, kind of weird, like, kind of noises.
Yeah,
and you're like,
yeah.
It just makes you feel uncomfortable. But there's
and
something.
You can really see the whites of their eyes when they do it. Yeah.
Because the camera's so low. Yeah, you really. That's totally it. And so.
Is it called a Dutch angle? Is that what when it's low up to high slanted? I think it might be called that.
I think it might be.
That's the angle at which I view most Dutch people.
Oh, come on now. You're taller than that.
I'm not next to a Dutchman, I'm not.
My abiding memory of going to Holland was how that extra few inches taller up the wall urinals were.
Oh, yeah. You're standing on your tippy toes.
Yeah.
You got to sit on a toilet, your feet are dangling a child's out of a high chair. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really useful for if you're white, you need to throw up, because it's just there at the right angle. I didn't know you knew the Dutch word for vomit.
And they do that a lot. I think it's interesting they're how the films kind of also represent that time too. I mean, they or at least you can kind of feel the struggle in the film work, I guess.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, you can. And it's got that sort of... It's fascinating because they've got that underdog sense, yet the heroes are not underdogs. They're powerful figures in authority, whether it's like someone like Shaft, who's actually a copper, or like pimps and gangsters who... They've got authority, just not happy authority. The films were made, unsurprisingly, because Hollywood wouldn't bankroll them. What a surprise, guys. Hollywood is not the progressive force that it likes to pretend it is.
No.
I know. Who can believe it? So the guy behind Sweet Sweetback's badass song was a chap called Melvin Van Peebles. Yes.
Such a good name.
Just tremendous.
And his son Mario.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. To be fair, what could be more fitting in a blaxploitation movie than someone hitting a brick and money coming out of it and then rescuing a princess from a big green guy? What's great in it, so he funded the film himself, he shot it independently. My favourite in Vaughan here is he performed all of his own stunts, appearing in several sex scenes, reportedly unsimulated.
Oh, hello.
If that doesn't make it sound seedy, he didn't entirely finance it himself.
Yeah. Depressingly, he received a $50,000 loan from, ding, 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 Bill Cosby.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Good God. Oh, man.
But there are a lot of sex scenes in this film.
It begins
in a brothel with his son playing him as a grown, like his grown up character is played by Melvin. His son Mario plays him
as
when
a
he's
younger
a child in a brothel.
Oh god!
And he loses his virginity in the brothel at the age of like 11.
There's a lot of scenes.
I don't know how unsimulated that sex scene was.
There's a lot of scenes like that. Like most blaxploitation films will have like the obligatory sex scene, and you're sort of like it's. And we'll probably get to it when I start talking about the film, Black Gestapo. But yeah, it kind of pops. Usually it just kind of comes out of nowhere. It's usually just okay, here we are. We had a sex scene happening.
if you want to play blaxploitation bingo, he's also renowned for having a large penis.
Oh, here we go.
All the films.
there's this kind of interesting thing where, it usually will come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'll be one scene where... Be like, okay, there's guys fighting, then pow! You're like, oh, and then there's these two people having sex. Someone will usually burst in sometimes. So there's a great film, I think it's Foxy Brown, where with Pam Grier.
Yeah.
And I think it's her brother who's like getting with some chick. Oh, no, actually, they're not having sex. She just comes in and like roughs her brother up because somebody's looking for her. And then she shoots her brother in the ear. And the brother's girlfriend comes in and goes, baby, who the hell was that? And she goes, and the brother goes, that's my sister. She's a whole lot of woman. And then that's the end of that scene. And I think there might be a sex scene after that.
Of course there is.
It's usually, but they're usually quite funny, so the sex scenes will be kind of quite clumsy. They're quite clumsily filmed sometimes. So I remember one, I can't remember which film it is, but like their hands over the nipples of this woman. And they just kind of, you just hear all of the kind of, the groaning and all that. But it's very, there's nothing sexy about it. You're just kind of watching going, well, I guess we're going to have to wait this out.
Till the plot continues. I read the Wikipedia description of the plot for Sweetback's badass song.
Uh-huh.
And my favourite little section of it is, he goes on the run because the police want to arrest him for a crime he didn't commit.
Yeah.
And there's a little section of the film where Sweetback then goes to a woman who cuts his handcuffs off in exchange for sex. With his handcuffs off, Sweetback continues onward, only to be captured by a chapter of the Hell's Angels. The female leader of the gang is impressed by the size of his penis and agrees to help him and Moo Moo escape from the police in exchange for sex.
Yeah. It's very much a pre-age film, isn't it?
It also feels a little bit like a vanity piece, I guess. Yeah. This is my day-to-day life. This is, Melvin Van Peebles.
Did cast himself in this film.
I actually think this is a documentary. Sweetback's badass song is a documentary about Melvin Van Peebles.
What's amazing about blaxploitation is it's like was so empowering for the African American community, and yet it's so, like you said, so much of the filmmaking is clumsy and jarring and weird. Yeah. Yet it had such a massive effect on other films, like it's that, you know, it had an effect on Bond movies and martial arts movies, and now Tarantino. Blaxploitation's influence has gone all the way to the very top.
Well, I think it's not quite like, so some of them are quite clumsy, though. Some of them are quite, they're set up quite well, and they're quite well done. Like one of my favorites is a film called Truck Turner with Isaac Hayes, Shaft, otherwise known as Shaft.
Is it just a guy in a car park with an articulated lorry for 90 minutes?
just doing
donuts.
Doing a 90-point turn.
Vooch. Vooch. Just constantly.
Guys, that is some astonishing Foley work you did there.
We've done ADR.
Is it my first rodeo? So Truck Turner is a private eye. And they're trying to stop this group of, I think it's pimps and madams. And they're running the city, and Truck Turner's trying to stop them. And so there's a great scene with Yaphet Kotto. I mean, he's almost blaxploitation royalty, I'd say. Yaphet Kotto steps out. There's a funeral scene. Yaphet Kotto steps out of this car. He's wearing full pimp jacket, white fur coat. Walks over to the funeral procession. They're burying the body in the ground. Camera cuts to POV. He spits on the camera, as in the actual, you know, the casket. Mm-hmm. That's what he's spitting on. Cut to the woman who's, like, person that died, like, they knew. He just wipes his mouth, looks at her, gets back in his car, drives off. That's the kind of scene, that's the kind of stuff you see in these films. Like, it's really, it's interesting. They don't kind of shy away from things like that. And I think it's sometimes, I guess, the clumsiness or in that kind of, they kind of come up with these great little scenes or great little shots through the kind of mistakes they're making. There's no sort of real traditional, like, right, we're going to lock it off and do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kind of filming. There's just like, hey, let's just get the camera right in there. Let's get it.
Yeah, I guess what's good is there can be, like, an amazing inventiveness and charm with that, but yeah. When it goes wrong, as we shall see.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the thing with all blaxploitation, all good blaxploitation films, is that there's, like, as sometimes, maybe, perhaps, as not quite polished as they are, there's usually always a charm to them. There's always something that you're like, yeah, all right, I'll go with this. Cause, like, it's usually so out there, like, the very famous scene from a film called Willie Dynamite, which was what? Black Dynamite, the film.
Sorry.
Willie Dynamite, yeah, great name. Great name for a film. Which is a film, Black Dynamite. Well, there's a scene in Black Dynamite that's based off this particular scene, but I think a lot of the film kind of sprung from this. So Willie Dynamite is about these, I guess, these pimps trying to sort of, like, you know, get their power back. And there's this great scene of the pimp council meet. And one of the pimps, Willie, is actually Gordon from Sesame Street. So here's a little fun fact.
Wow.
So he was an actor, and then he was Gordon in Sesame Street.
And then his Big Bird in charge of the council.
The kids gotta count.
One pimp. Two pimps.
Yeah, Groucho's. In the scene of Willie Dynamite, yeah, there's all these kind of quite ridiculous out there characters. There's this guy who opens his watch and he's got cocaine in the watch and he sniffs some cocaine off his little finger and he says, "Oh, it hurts so good." And it's things like that that are really kind of quite fun and charming. And I think, yeah, they, as much as they're quite out there, there is this relative thing of, like, I feel like shouldn't be taken too seriously. You're like, okay, it feels like they're having fun when they're making
these
films.
They've had such a big influence on it. Is it the Mac where it's the player's ball with everyone arriving at the thing?
Yeah,
and, like, this 4-minute-long montage of people getting out of limos and walking up.
Oh, yeah.
Red carpets and, like, shots inside a club. And it's that typical, now when you've people arriving at a party or an after party or a thing, that's the sort of shots
that you get for it.
They're mimicking that.
Right. And it's funny, there's a lot of really... A lot of blaxploitation films have a lot of really long shots. Like, stuff
that
you're like...
Yeah, that sequence lasts about 4.5 minutes. There's no plot. It's just loads of people arriving at this party.
And, nothing happens. No one talks. It's just people getting out of cars. Yeah, you're like...
singing.
Well, this is going to happen. I guess we're going
to... Is that a moment for people in the cinema to just sort of get up, have one round, get some drinks,
get some
hot dogs?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's clever.
They're just like, hey, this is the break. We're just having a little...
They should do that more in films. Like, there's the bit where James Bond has been given his briefing for his mission... And then he has to go home and pack.
Yeah.
So while he's packing, he can go out, like, there's a 10-minute sequence of him, you know, getting out his trunky.
Yeah, and he's just like, self-find.
I don't need 5. There might be a pool in the hotel, so maybe 1 pair of swimming trunks.
Packing and then repacking, I'd like to see him, like, take things out.
Yeah,
like, no, I definitely don't need that.
Do you think with James Bond instead, they could extend that by just, instead of ordering a martini, he could order an old-fashioned.
Oh, yeah.
It's just 10 minutes at the cocktail bar stirring the ice round and round.
And he's just standing there, kind of just tapping the bar,
flicking his credit card around in his fingers.
Oh, or doing that bar trick with the beer mat, flipping it up and trying to grab it for 10 minutes.
And then when he goes to pay for it, the card is initially declined, so he has to ring the bank. And during all of this, you can go get your popcorn and have a wine.
Do you take contactless?
Fair enough. only less than tenner.
Should I put this on
the work
on the country? Can we expense this?
Yeah. Hang on, I have to ring MoneyPenny just to check. Yeah.
I'm at a bar. Yeah, no, I know it's noisy. Yeah.
Hang on, I'll step outside.
He steps outside, yeah. We watch the phone call. That would be great. It's like there's...
Then he goes back inside and the bad guy's drunk as old-fashioned. Yeah, and back into the fight.
Yeah, then yeah, back that's in. It. Then that's how we get back into the film. Love that's it. Perfect. In fact, that should be... I think we should put this in the pirate blaxploitation.
Yeah.
A scene where it's just something normal.
Someone has to sand their wooden leg.
Yeah. They're just... There's a lot of blowing and sanding. Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That would be fantastic.
Flight prep.
Yeah.
Flight prep. And then in the background there's just a guy in a B&Q orange apron just going like, why not use the all new sander?
Always gotta have that extra just across the just to blow that dust off. You've gotta get that off. A plane, like a plane sander, so that he just shaves. There's shavings.
Yeah.
Things.
You have a guy with a brush that brushes it away into sacks because they do sort of sell them on to butchers to throw across the floor of a butcher.
Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh, it's a blaxploitation pirate movie. They are selling it off as brown cocaine. It's like, oh, this coke is rough. It's like, I'm bleeding out of my ears as soon as I snort a line.
So far, these pirates are going around selling cocaine. I love how back in time they've somehow managed to figure out the process of making cocaine with ether, cooking it.
No, they're selling fake cocaine. They're selling
real cocaine doesn't exist.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So they're
selling.
I mean, they're ahead of their time.
A fake version of a drug that
doesn't exist yet. These guys are ahead of their time. I like that. I like the idea of someone storming in, demanding more product or shaking people down, and everyone not quite understanding, like, what are we even selling?
Yeah, don't worry, it's going to be massive.
It'll be huge.
Yeah, the cop going in and go, you've got raw product on you. No, I haven't. And he shakes him up and down and just 15 doorknobs fall out of his pockets.
Yeah. They have like, they find like they go to like a sawmill and that's like the huge.
That's the front.
That's the front, yeah. It's like a sawmill.
They're not raiding other pirate ships.
They're just logging raiding companies. Loggers. Well, this is the pioneer.
Taking lumberjacks as prisoners.
Yeah. Oh, man. This is it. This is going to be big. This is going to be a big movie.
Fuck the rest of the podcast. Yeah, we're going to storyboard this.
We're going to pitch this film. This is going to be amazing.
We should get back on track. What else have you got to tell us about Sweet Sweetback's badass song? But by the way, do you know what Sweet Sweetback's a reference to?
No?
It's apparently to do with his penis size. I have never heard of a penis being called a sweetback.
Yeah, that's not something I've heard either.
Yeah, but yeah, it's because he's got a big dick. So
but what is a sweet sweetback? That's never like
I don't know.
Now, you know, I'm not gonna lie here. I'm not deep into, you know, I'm probably the whitest black guy you've ever met. But I mean, even in my circles, I've never heard we've never referred to it as a sweetback. I've done my research. I've been out in the trenches. Nothing. No one's calling it that.
Oh, out in the black trenches. Oh, yeah. Are we going to put those into the movie as well? So the pirates and all in the black trenches.
I mean, let's go all out. Let's go all out. Let's make it a time travel piece too. So they're in it's World War One.
Oh, I was imagining them wearing black trench coats.
Oh right.
Oh nice.
Yeah. That's.
Oh, they'll have a nice swish to them when they're fighting.
Yeah, leather trench coats.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but if it was in the World War One trenches, that's who you could sell the fake cocaine to help them stay awake.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're really this is going to be big. This is going to be big.
I smell a Christmas Doctor Who special. we've spoken, frankly, in glowing terms about blaxploitation so far. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty of the shit stuff.
Okay.
Very quickly, I found something that reminded me of something we chatted about with Archie Maddox a couple of weeks ago in our World's Worst Playwright. In 1980, the opera director, Peter Sellers, not that one, produced and directed a staging of Mozart's Don Giovanni in the manner of a blaxploitation film.
Wait,
what?
Yeah.
Set in contemporary Spanish Harlem, with the African-American singers portraying anti-heroes, street thugs, killed by gunshot rather than with a sword, using recreational drugs and partying almost naked.
This is one of those things where somebody comes into a producer's office... And they say it, and the producer's like, yeah, let's do this. That sounds incredible. And then, Like, that producer is in no way involved in any other part of the production.
And they has just no idea.
Yeah.
It's like, it's my last day, I'm retiring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like tomorrow...
it's the Twitter guy who deactivated Donald Trump's account.
Like, they ask him as he's kicking in the wall and pulling the copper wiring out, and he's like, yeah, sure, go for it. And then the next day he's like, oh, the office is empty.
So. Yeah. But it's not a blaxploitation movie, so I can't pick that. I went down a couple of rabbit holes. The first one brought me to a Danish director called Morten Lindberg, who at first I thought was the lead singer of A-ha, which would have been an amazing crossover.
That's Morten Harkett.
That is Morten Harkett. He has written and directed a movie that I'm going to politely call Gay Negroes from Outer Space.
Is that the actual title?
No.
Oh, okay. Now, it's probably offensive, the actual title.
Yeah.
But for the sake of, I kind of really want to hear how ridiculous it is.
Just replace Negroes with another N-word.
Wow, that's incredible. That's an incredible title for a film.
I mean, it's a film I'd want to watch. The plot is very simple. Intergalactic homosexuals from the planet Anus. That is the planet Anus.
Not your anus, just Anus. Anus.
They discover women. So they come to Earth. They use their ray guns to eliminate all of the Earth women, who, by the way, have been oppressing men on Earth. Okay. And then they show the men of Earth a good time. My favourite thing is, two favourite things about it is, one, once they've shown the men of Earth a good time, they then fuck off back to the planet Anus, but leave a gay ambassador back on Earth.
Please, a gambassador.
A gambassador. No, that's an ambassador to prawns. And, they leave a white ambassador and a black ambassador, and brilliantly, this film has a link to The Wizard of Oz, because it pulls the same trick that The Wizard of Oz does, whereby it starts in black and white and then goes into colour when they land on Earth.
Wow. I mean, that's really strange, because in The Wizard of Oz, there is a kind of creative reason that it happened.
Yes.
Whereas in Gay Negroes from Outer Space, there's no reason that the planet of Anus should be black and white. I don't understand why.
There's one thing for sure, though, that the gay planet Anus is somewhere over the rainbow.
So my character will probably be a film called The Black Gestapo. And I've seen a fair amount of blaxploitation films, and this is probably the worst I've ever seen, The Black Gestapo. Now, what's strange about it, so it kind of opens. The film is basically about a small radical group. They call themselves the People's Army. And, they're kind of like, oh, well, our community is being overtaken by these gangsters who are coming in and, you know, they're ordering protection money from a lot of the kind of black shops. You know, it's kind of like a gang comes in and they, so the People's Army, like, we got to fight against them. That's the kind of opening scene, is this guy delivering a speech, and there's a very few extras in a field filmed probably on a day that they're like, this is the best we're going to get. Let's just film this thing. So they
in deep foreground? Or?
Oh, they're deep foreground, definitely. Yeah. they stand there, he does this speech. There's nothing sort of too untoward about it, just like, we got to stand up for our community. And then the title kind of splash comes up, and it's like World War II footage of Nazis marching, some weird stock footage of Hitler just walking around, and he's like, hey, and a couple of Sieg Heils in the background, and then The Black Gestapo, that's the splash title, boof, over that. And then what's interesting is that there's not really much sort of Nazism really brought up in the film past that. So then what happens is we follow the gang who's kind of, they're knocking over these places for protection money. This really, one of the actors who plays the kind of leader of the gang, he's actually quite good. He's actually quite a good actor. He's like, out of all of them who are kind of, they feel like they've just kind of been brought on this off the street to act as other gangsters are like, oh, hey, boss, we tried to knock over this place, but we didn't get enough. And he's like, now, let me tell you something, boys. And he's really going for it, the actor. And so what happens is the People's Army fight back, but then they kind of become as bad as the syndicate that's knocking over these places. Yeah. So, like, it's kind of a slow turn in that. So the group splinters. There's a guy called General Ahmed, who kind of doesn't believe they should be more forceful and nasty. And I forget the name of the other main guy. I think it's, let me, I'll IMDb him as we're talking. But yeah, he splinters off and he kind of becomes the more extreme version of the People's Army. And so he goes out every time somebody's, you know, gets knocked over, he'll kind of show up and he'll beat up these guys. So it's really weird. Like, there's a horrible scene where this woman, there's this nurse in the, one of the opening scenes, and she gets hit up by these two white guys. And they, then some of the People's Army go back. They get, and the two white guys beat up two guys in the People's Army. And then later on, these two white guys find that nurse again, and they rape her, which is horrible. And the People's Army break into his house, this guy Vinny, I think it is, or Vito. They break into his house, but they break into his house like, this movie definitely deserves the award for the worst breaking into any place ever. Because, like, they break into his house, not, most people would think you break into a house, if it's high up, maybe you'll get a ladder and climb up. They go onto the roof and climb down with a rope ladder, and they break into the guy's house, and there's like six of them. And the guy's taking a bath. And, like, so there's three of them outside the bath. One of them standing kind of on top of where the kind of, there's like a little landing on the bath. And one of them is in the bath with him. So the guy's kind of spread eagle in the bath, and one of them is standing on one side of his legs. And then the leader of the splinter group comes in and stands in between his legs. And they cut his balls off.
Another common trope in exploitation movies. Yeah.
There's a lot of cutting off of genitals. Yeah. That's a big thing. And they cut his balls off, and then they flush his balls down the toilet.
In one flush?
Yeah.
That's not happening.
I mean, it's... well, this guy's got to have
got,
a pretty
he's got good...
good
pipes.
He's got very good pipes. Well, they cut it off, and it does that classic 70s Dutch angle of, like, you know, the kind of... that sound effect.
I could say they do the Dutch angle on his balls.
On the guy's face, and you hear that kind of guttural, like, sound as they're getting cut off. And then there's some great special effects, because the... In the bath, you don't see anything. You just see sort of blood just kind of gushing in the bathwater, slowly turning red.
Wow, it's the blaxploitation version of the shower scene from Sci-Fi.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
and those balls are now in a Planet Hollywood somewhere.
Oh yeah. Well, one of the shutdown ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to work out what the sort of screeching strings from Psycho would sound like put through a wah wah pedal.
You know, wah wah. So it's a...
It's like a baby crying.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Colonel Koja, that's his name. So Colonel Koja is the leader of the splinter group.
Oh,
so
I see.
He flushes the balls down the toilet, and he says, if any of your men come round here and try that again, I'm going to flush them down the toilet like your wimpy balls, or something like that. They walk out, and then he has the goodwill to go, call this man an ambulance, or he's going to bleed to death. What's really weird is that for every nasty action they do... they're kind of half responsible enough to call an ambulance or something, except for the final one they do that takes him over the edge. And what's really fascinating about the film is, so it kind of escalates. We actually don't see General Ahmed, the kind of better guy, for most of the film. We're just following these nasty splinter group doing their thing. And then they come across another guy, you know, another sort of smaller gang hitting over this TV store. And they're kind of in the back of the shop. They come out and they're like, hey, don't knock this guy over. The Black Gestapo come out. And they beat up these guys. And one of the gang members, the syndicate, shoots one of the Gestapo members. He falls over. And then General Koja is like, well, you shot one of my men, so I'm going to shoot one of yours. And then he goes, call this guy an ambulance. And they're like, why are you being so nice? You're supposed to be, you know.
All the good catchphrases were taken at this point.
Yeah, call this man an ambulance. So then the white gang, you know, they're like, oh, man, we're getting hit up. And then there's another face-off. The Black Gestapo think they're going to take over, you know, another place. And this hairdresser, and they all get shot. And so they run, there's this one guy, they go back to their syndicate leader and he freaks out and they send off to, like, you know, don't back down. So they go off and this one guy, the leader of the faction, kind of, he's driving around and he gets run off the road and he's got all the collection money and the Black Gestapo are there and they're like holding him up. He's like, no, come on. They run him off the road and his car rolls down a hill for some time. This is a popular thing in Black Exploitation films. Cars rolling off hills roll for about a minute, 30 seconds to a minute, and, like, you know, rolls all the way down the hill to the bottom of the hill, and you go,
well, it's, I mean, he's dead. He's, there are no seatbelts. You remember it back in the 70s. Cut to him, and he's just bleeding from his head. And he's like, oh, man, don't shoot me. They shoot him. They firebomb the car. And, you know, that's the point. They don't even call the ambulance. There's no ambulance calling. You're like, oh, these guys have turned. They've turned. And at this point, they've also got a big facility. They drive up to a mansion, and one guy goes, yeah, well, this is the place. We've got a tennis court, all these great facilities. This is we're going to be the training area, the tennis court, the pool. We got to have some R&R for our boys. And there's no mention of if it's purchased. They just kind of roll up and they're like, this is ours now. No one buys it. There's no deed being signed. I mean, this is a lesser point, but anyway.
So they has a rich relative who's just left.
He's just left and left them a mansion.
Yeah.
So, and this is what happens when I'm watching this film is that I kind of, at this point, I feel like it's kind of become a cautionary tale because these guys are kind of going further and further. And they end up taking over the syndicate and they start collecting the collection money, the protection money. So they've just replaced the syndicate. And I start to go, well, hang on a second. They've become everything they've hated. And then at this point in the story, we cut back to General Ahmed, the kind of good guy who has no idea that all this horrible stuff has started happening. And then there's the obligatory sex scene with the nurse who we met earlier. But it's not really a sex scene. It's just kind of, they just kind of look at each other and then she happens to be naked. And that's it. This also has the Oscar or category for best off-screen scene that then gets described to another character, in which the nurse is called up because she works in a clinic. She's called up, and then there's the doctor of the clinic. He goes, "Hey, the clinic just got bombed, and we're at the clinic." And he's standing there. He's perfectly fine. He's like, "No one was hurt. No one was injured." But it's just been roughed up. It's just been roughed up. Like someone's just knocked some stuff over on set and been like, well, a bomb went off. But we don't actually see the bomb. We just...
It was smoke bombs.
Yeah, we just hear about the bomb going off.
Cherry bombs. Yeah. Threw a bit of Haribo in there.
Someone came in, pushed some things over. So then, anyway, she gets freaks out at General Ahmed. She's like, get out of my house, you and your group of Gestapo Nazis. So he's like, what? So he goes to prove his, you know, that he's a good person. He hits one of the guys. He hits one of the Gestapo members. So now this, yeah, he hits one of those guys off, steals some money from them. Obviously, this pisses off the Gestapo. They, I mean, it's very hard to call them the Gestapo, but that's the only way I can differentiate them from the other Splinter Cell, the People's Army. So the bad People's Army, the good People's Army. By the way, the Syndicate now have, they're out of the film. This is another thing that happens in a lot of these blaxploitation films. Sometimes the villain that we think we're building up to will just get dropped and then someone else will replace them.
Do we think that's a production issue? Just like, oh, we just went, yeah.
The actors had other jobs to go do.
Yeah, they're like, okay, so now it's about these guys. So then we're following, obviously, General Ahmed trying to stop the kind of nasty faction of the People's Army. I'm going to call them that from now on, the kind of darker People's Army. And then there's a couple of scenes where they're... They're giving these rousing speeches and they salute, but it's like a combination of the Black Power salute and the Nazi salute. So it's kind of like a punch forward. It's quite weird.
Like a one-handed Hail Hydra.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. And it's just weird. You're like, well, this is odd. we get to, they catch up with General Ahmed, our good guy, and they found out he's knocked them off for some money. What happens is the bad People's Army, they chase him off, they run him off the road. Oh no, they kidnap him in the middle of the night. They drive him out in the middle of nowhere, they shoot him, they push him off a cliff. And then
he takes a minute and a half to roll to the bottom.
It's just...
And then he explodes at the bottom.
For no reason, he just explodes.
And his skeleton crawls out of his skin, a little bit of blood down the side of his eye socket.
They say what I think is probably my favorite thing is... if the bullet didn't get him, the fall certainly will. That's a big mistake. That's a classic bad guy mistake.
What do you mean the bullet
mistake.
Didn't get him? You shot him from close distance.
Yeah, you couldn't miss, and you shot him in the stomach, and then you pushed him off a hill, and you're like, he's probably dead.
Call him an ambulance anyway, just got assault and wound.
Should we call him an ambulance? We don't do that anymore. You know we don't do that anymore. So he comes back, obviously, which I think that's a nice... Like filmically, this is the weird thing about it, is like as charmless as this film was, I started to kind of like a Stockholm syndrome type thing. I was like, well, I gotta root for somebody. I gotta get something out of this film. So we get to so General Ahmed decides to fight back. He comes back to the Black Gestapo's, I guess, headquarters, and he goes to sneak in. Oh, no, he first drives... Yeah, he goes to sneak in. He does some pretty crazy stuff. He gets a grappling hook on the tree. Classic. I don't know where you love buy a grappling hook. I mean, I love it. It's
they don't sell them anymore.
The swingy grappling hook as well. So the swing up in the tree. He climbs over. Again, this is, yeah, award for just the most... Like, round... Why don't you just get some bolt cutters and cut the wire link fence? Anyway... He gets in, he sneaks in, he does the classic trope of beating people up and stealing their uniform and climbing the ranks associated, and, you know, so he steals an officer's uniform at one point. Then he does probably my favorite thing to get rid of all of the other soldiers on the compound. He dresses up as an officer, and then he orders them to go on, like, an endurance run. And they buy it. They believe him. They're like, so he goes like, okay, boys, it's time for an endurance run. Now, don't worry. All you got to do is you go out and they like, don't worry. If you fall over, trucks will be there to pick you up. So, like, they all just agree, considering this is a man they've never met before. But they're like, well, he is an officer. I guess we'll just go with him. Out they go. He fights a few more people. I mean, this sneaking could rival Commando, the movie Commando. He's pretty good. Sets up a couple of tripwire things. Eventually, so come to the climax of the film. He faces Kojo, and they fight outside the pool. He says more what I think is my favorite line. He says, before he fights, he holds a gun to him. He goes, throw the gun in the pool, motherfucker, or I'll make you sink like a rock. Which I think is... that should go down in movie history as the greatest line of all time. So they fight. One of Kojo's cohorts comes along. They fight. They kill him. They fight. And then they fight in a pool... underwater, on top of the water, they're fighting, and they're fighting over one gun, which then it's really weird because, like, the camera shows that, like, our hero, Ahmed, has a gun holstered in his holster that he could have used at any time, and he's decided just not to. He's like, no, I gotta fight over this gun. Kills Kojo, classic, you don't see it, you hear it, bang, bubbles. Our hero gets out and walks away. And that's the end of the film. I mean, it's got the beats of a movie. But it's not a movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's really, really odd. And I think what I found really odd about it is that it's like, as much as it says it's the black, you know, it calls it the Black Gestapo, I'm thankful really that they didn't explore that any deeper than was needed. Would I watch it again? Never in a million years. Would I recommend other people watch it? No. Is it the terrible film? Is it the worst blaxploitation film I've seen? Without a doubt, 100%.
I spent a lot of time looking at little trailers for some blaxploitation films.
Oh, yeah?
Just some highlights from the trailers I've seen. From the film Hitman, there's a shooting in a squash court and a lion attacks a lady.
Oh, classic.
As well as a classic chase on top of a crane.
Oh, yeah, you always got to have a chase on top of a crane, absolutely.
Welcome Home, Brother Charles involves one of the worst rooftop chases I've ever seen, where it's basically a guy running across a very slippy roof, throwing, like, chairs and boxes, but in a really, like, cack-handed way at the people who are chasing him.
Oh, yeah.
It's like there's loads of space on his roof, but he manages to throw the chair, and they will run into the area where the chair is, and it's on the other way.
Yeah, it's like there's a whole rooftop.
Yeah.
And they're just like, no, we gotta
run where he's throwing that stuff. Tagline, they tried to take everything, even his manhood.
There we go. It's here again.
And in Black Belt Jones, starring the excellent Jim Kelly,
there's
a foam fight where he's fighting loads of guys in foam who do that great thing of where he's doing loads of these roundhouse kicks, but, like, they're all standing in a circle around him waiting for him to get to them to roundhouse kick him. He roundhouse kick one guy and the next guy's there sort of, like, bobbing on the spot like Ryu, just buffering.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then, but also, during that fight, he pulls someone's literal hair out of their head.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Incredible.
Yeah.
That may be only rivaled by a blaxploitation film. I think it's Pam Grier. I think it's called Coffee.
Yes.
Where before a fight, she slips razor blades into her hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes, and someone goes to grab it and they cut their hands.
Yeah, that reminds me of Foxy Brown, where it's the iconic bit where she pulls a revolver out of her afro.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that's referenced in a lot of cartoons and in comedy. But I think there's a cartoon where, is it in Family Guy, someone pulls a revolver, like a rifle out of an afro in one.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I was going to say, surely, like, Marge Simpson's always hiding shit in her hair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, another little highlight from trailers, Abar, the first black Superman,
tagline, "Beware his righteous stare." The setup to this is there's a Dr. and Mrs. Kincaid move into a white community, and Dr. and Mrs. Kincaid are black, and the friendly white neighbors come around to welcome the Kincaids by talking to what they think are the butler and maid with their beautiful children. No, that's Dr. and Mrs. Kincaid, the black people. And it gets a little bit near riot in the community. Whoa. And Dr. Kincaid gets another black guy and says he can make you indestructible, and creates basically the Superman character, who can just basically transform things with his eyes. So he turns a man's food into worms. And favorite clip, there's a black priest coming out of church and walking around his car to get into it, and the A-bar stares at the car, and we cut back to the black priest, and he's sitting on a horse and cart.
What the hell?
They clearly don't have the budget to like do the transformation in shot, so it's like car, man's eyes, back to horse and cart.
That's so Monty Python.
It's so good.
Please tell me there's a horrible sound effect like whoop.
Yeah. What is Black Superman's kryptonite?
Is it white women?
Is it skiing?
Is it skiing? I would say skiing. Skiing, pools, yeah, bodies of water.
Golf clubs,
yeah.
Well, it's the 70s, so yeah.
The golf course.
We mentioned Pam Grier. She is amazing.
Yes, she's fantastic.
She's astonishing. She's sort of the iconic... strong female lead in black exploitation films, starring films like Foxy Brown and Coffee, and then she was in Jackie Brown, wasn't she?
Yes.
Yeah, and she played Foxy Brown, and there's another female character in black exploitation films called Cleopatra Jones. So Cleopatra in Austin Powers 3, which is played by Beyonce, is a mashup of those two characters. But I read a couple of quotes from Pam Grier talking about working in black exploitation films, and. She makes a couple of good points. One, the male Hollywood action films, she said a lot of Hollywood people, they were not comfortable with showing a progressive black female in an action role. Mm. As a strong woman, I was seen as a threat. I remember certain people saying, oh, she's taking her job, she's castrating men. As far as I was concerned, I thought, we don't need to walk behind you, we should walk beside you. Boom! Yeah. Go, Pam Grier, you rock. And then she also talked about when people would say that she was demeaning black women and black people in general in these films. She said, well, why would people think I would ever demean the black woman? I was tried and convicted without being asked to testify in my defense. Sure, a lot of those films were junk, but they were what was being offered. They provided work for me and jobs for hundreds of blacks. We all needed to work. We all needed to eat.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, interestingly, why I found sort of the Black Gestapo kind of a little bit. I was like, oh, well... somebody made a film and it's not great, but they tried.
And they were tapping into a need.
Of some kind. I think that's what's so funny about it. Yeah, is that they kind of went like, oh yeah, well, like you're saying, is that think of empowerment kind of as well, even though obviously the route that they took is very...
it's very route one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Such as the comedy of Rudy Ray Moore. I'm surprised we haven't mentioned him so far. Rudy Ray Moore's character Dolomite is a feature several blaxploitation films.
Yeah.
So Rudy Ray Moore he's known in some circles as the godfather of rap. He did a lot of his early... A lot of his act was doing this Dolomite character where we do these sexually explicit rhymes while accompanied by jazz and R&B music. And Snoop Dogg and various other people have said they wouldn't have... created anything without Rudy Ray Moore's act and Dolomite.
And this is like early 70s?
Late 60s, early 70s, okay. And a lot of his rhymes are about the pimps and prostitutes and all the sort of characters you find in a lot of these blaxploitation films. Some of his comedy album titles include Eat Out More Often.
Oh my god.
Good Old Big Ones. And This Pussy Belongs to Me. It's quite on the nose, though.
Yeah, that last one, they're just like, oh, you know what? I tried being subtle. Screw it.
Dolomite appears in lots of films, including The Human Tornado and Dolomite and a couple of others. And there are so many boobs and so much sex in these films, including a sex scene where he fucks a woman so hard that the house falls apart around them.
Dolomite has a squad of kung fu women, I believe, that follow him around, which I think is fantastic.
That reminds me that I think it's the Black Gestapo. Russ Meyers has got a part in it. Famous softcore pornographer.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's really weird. He shows up and you're like, what the hell are you doing here?
Some quotes from Dolomite. He speaks in rhyme all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I got a dong as big as King Kong.
I put my thing in the ground and turned the whole world around. Dolomite is my name, yeah. And fucking up motherfuckers is my game. And from the first to the last, I give them the blast so fast that their life has passed before their ass has hit the grass.
Yeah, I like to hope that listeners were singing along with you there.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite, probably my favorite line of all time. Would have to be, Dolomite is my name, fucking up motherfuckers is my game.
Iconic. Oh, another iconic film character with the catchphrases is James Bond, of course. And immortalized in the film That Man Bolt. No, not quite James Bond, but they did. There was a James Bond rip-off film called That Man Bolt, where Fred Williamson, and of course it's Fred Williamson, he's in every fucking blaxploitation film,
of course,
plays Jefferson Bolt. Bit like James Bond, that name, isn't it? And
Names
they
Bolt.
Call him Bolt. Jefferson Bolt. Yeah. In fact, some of the films for the posters for the film have the line "He's bonded" on some.
Oh my god!
And the title is written in the shape of a revolver, and it looks like a James Bond poster.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it's amazing. It is just him going in a say James Bond type adventure. A lot of karate chops. In fact, the poster lists all the martial artists who appear in the film as an attraction to it. The trailer has, in big capital letters with exclamation marks behind it, karate, kickboxing, and called the entertainment bolt of the year. And Fred Williamson, it has a great line in it. The woman comes up to him in a bar and she goes, "That's quite a nice tan you have." And he goes, "Yeah, I keep it all year round."
Oh, classic. Great.
Self-racism. Fred Williamson is another one of the former American football.
Yeah, he was a star.
Oh, right. Yeah, he played NFL and AFL. And his nickname was Fred the Hammer Williamson. Because when he played American football, he would use his forearms to basically karate chop people when he was running defense.
Oh, there's a lot of karate and a lot of martial arts in these films. It's really interesting how they just keep like coming up, even though they're really badly done.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that weird ADR. To go back to ADR, a lot of weird like, and like even in the Blackest Hour, but there's a lot of scenes where people are walking around outdoors, but the ADR is clearly someone who's walking around inside.
Yeah, so
I don't think shoes make that loud a sound on concrete.
Well, you get and this like the karate crossover. You get the character I've forgotten his name in End of the Dragon.
Yes,
who's the clearly wandered out of a blaxploitation.
Oh yeah. Well, that was a kind of interesting, I guess, sort of somewhat crossover of martial arts to blaxploitation. In a certain, you know, I think a lot of early martial arts films carry, I think, I don't know, in my opinion anyway, carry some of the elements of blaxploitation, albeit completely removed and almost by accident. In that,
yeah,
these two things were happening at the same time, and there's a lot of interesting things parallels there. It's like whereas blaxploitation was very much quite fast and moving quite quickly, and there's a lot of close-up stuff. Most good martial arts films will kind of sit back and show you
the action.
And see what's happening. And then sometimes blaxploitation films would have that crossover where they'd be like, right, well, we want to show the action. We want to see them badly karate chopping people. Yeah.
Well, so it goes like, action, white to the eyes. Yeah. Action, white to the eyes.
There's a lot of that. Goes, and then, back to,
But there is an actual James Bond film heavily influenced by blaxploitation, and that's Live and Let Die.
With Yaphet Kotto.
Yaphet Kotto's in it. And it's the first Bond movie to sort of move away from the supervillain trying to rule the world sort of thing, and it sort of focuses down to drug trafficking and catching Mr. Big, which is a drug trafficking, obviously, big trope in blaxploitation movies.
Mm.
And Rosie Carver is the first black Bond girl, played by Gloria Hendry.
Oh, yeah.
Solitaire, which is the Jane Seymour character, was going to be black. They thought about getting Diana Ross to play her.
Yeah.
She is bad at acting as she is at taking penalties.
No, they didn't get her to... Well, basically, I think in the book, Solitaire is white. So they went back to sort of the Fleming source material. I have a couple of another little bits of film lore before I come to my suggestion. We haven't mentioned Blackula.
Oh, that's a classic
black horror film. And one of Spawn's, or not Spawn, but sort of one of the iconic ones of a run of black horror movies that I also included is a Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
And
just put Black in the title and hopefully that'll make it a horror film. Yeah.
And you got Blackenstein as well, obviously.
Scream Blackula Scream is another
one. Blackula Scream, exactly. Blackenstein, the cast included a non-actor called Joe Dassault, who was a client of the criminal lawyer Frank R. Stalteri, who had actually written and produced the film. So it's just this
He's like one into the film. One of my clients. Could probably be.
Frank R. Solteri also wrote, produced, and directed the never released Black the Ripper.
that can't be sitting in a vault somewhere. That needs to see the light of day. Yeah. That's incredible.
And fun fact, he was later murdered in a gangland killing at his home, which was formerly owned by Bela Lugosi.
Whoa. It's like the horror circles come full circle. Yeah, that's amazing.
But the Blackenstein, amazingly, it was the movie made use of the actual sets from a 1930s film of Frankenstein, the famous 1930s Frankenstein film.
Oh, wow.
Which were designed by the legendary set designer Kenneth Strickfaden. And he also designed sci-fi machinery for The Wizard of Oz, The Monsters, and Young Frankenstein.
Whoa, so they just got hold of the old set.
Yeah, the sort of the popping lights and the flashing bulbs and the electricity zipping. That's amazing. Down. Yeah, yeah. So they just, you know, used that, recycled it.
I think there's a Blackula film I've seen that I forget the actual title of it, but there's a brilliant scene in that film where there's this woman. I think there's two Blackulas. and it might be Scream Blackula, Scream actually. And there's a woman and she's freaking out and she runs into one of the Blackulas in the house. She goes ah, and then she runs across to the other one ah, and they kind of close in on her and the distance that she's running becomes shorter and shorter until she looks at both of them and then dies of fear.
Do they have a 5 second roll, Dracula's, where they have to suck the blood 5 seconds before then she's died? Like, just die, quickly get her before the blood goes cold.
It's like a 5 minute scene. And then they roll her down a hill.
And the film Superfly, directed by Gordon Parks Jr., directed Shaft. His dad helped fund this film. And Superfly is about a pimp. Obviously, and it started the trend for pimp mobiles because the pimp in the film has this massive pimped out car.
Yeah,
and suddenly everyone we saw this like, oh, we need to have shiny hubcaps and drawn like fire blazing along the side of the car and all sort of stuff. But it was the first film to knock The Godfather off the number one spot in US cinemas in 1972.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And but it also managed to be one of the only films to be outgrossed by its own soundtrack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The music is written and produced by Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's amazing. Yeah. The only other pimped out car I think that possibly surpasses the cars in Superfly would have to be the car that the Duke of New York drives in Escape from New York.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen this film, but I think it is Isaac Hayes. Again, he plays the Duke of New York, and he gets... And there's a car, it's like a Cadillac, but it has chandeliers where... you know, some of those old school Cadillacs had the mirrors quite far forward.
Yeah.
So where those mirrors should be, there are a set of two chandeliers either side. And the car drives up and he gets out in his kind of pimp coat. You think, that's incredible.
It's a Top Gear idea that if it was actually executed by Clarkson would look horrible because it's Isaac Hayes.
But my suggestion is going to be Sweet Sweet Back's Badass Song. And not because it's necessarily a bad film. In fact, it became really, like, iconic. It was nearly the first Black Power movie.
Mm.
Black Panther Party members were sort of basically made watch it.
Yeah.
It earned over $4 million at the box office, despite only opening in two cinemas initially, Detroit and Atlanta. So it became, like, it was a massive deal. It kind of really helped spark, along with Shaft, helped really fuel the desire for blaxploitation movies.
But for you, it's the worst blaxploitation movie because it spawned all the others.
But also, and by the way, Earth, Wind and Fire, who were unknown at the time, did the soundtrack for the movie.
Whoa.
Yeah. But no, it's not the worst for being a bad film. It's the worst for being a terrible film to work on. Because you mentioned Van Peebles did all his own stunts, including the sex scenes. And doing unsimulated sex scenes meant he contracted gonorrhea the film.
Oh, dear.
And so successfully applied to the Directors Guild of America for compensation because he'd been hurt on the job.
I'd like to be in that office when he tried.
Yeah.
I got gonorrhea from... hang on a second. On a movie you're shooting in which you're the star.
Written, directed, produced by.
And you're having sex in constantly. Yeah, sure, I'll write the check. Yeah, whatever.
He used the money to buy more film to help finish the film.
I love how those two moments came together at the same time.
Yeah,
he's like,
he did and his
actress. And he's like, I have gonorrhea and we're out of money.
Yeah.
This is a really bad turn, guys.
How can we monetize this?
That is a sentence no man wants to say to his wife.
I got gonorrhea
and we're out of money.
I'd hope, yeah, there's that kind of spotlight fade.
Yeah.
Open up.
And he does a little shrug to the camera. Yeah.
Then open to him coming out of the office like, well, I can't believe that worked.
I sort of think that's the opening line of Black Pirates.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I got gonorrhea and we're out of money. Yes. And then that's why they set sail.
Yeah.
Set sail for adventure, friends.
Nice.
The Black Pirates are here.
Doing all his stunts also meant that he had to, on one occasion, jump off a bridge 9 times to get the right shot.
Right.
And they shot the whole film in 19 days because they had a lot of amateur actors in the film and they'd worried that either they'd obviously go off and do another job or they'd shave or cut their hair.
Yeah, so continuity is hell on
those films. Continuity was awful. Not only did he have to do all that, he had a gun on film, on set, because they were filming without a union and they were afraid that things would get a bit hairy. And the gun ended up in a prop box on one occasion.
Oh no.
Yeah, led to a near-death experience.
Oh, man.
They filmed with some actual Hell's Angels for a scene where they had Hell's Angels in it. And one biker wanted to leave. He said some prior angel engagement to go to.
And, I got a thing at 5.
Yeah. And when told he couldn't leave, he pulled a knife.
Oh, well, yeah.
And so Van Peebles snapped his fingers and the crew produced guns and pointed them at him and basically made him finish the shoot at gunpoint.
Wow!
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What an incredible set to work on.
Yeah, another occasion, they had to set fire to a car and they had a permit to do it, applied for it so late that it hadn't been processed, and when news got out of this car on fire, a fire engine arrived on set.
Wow.
To see what was happening, and that shot is in the film of the fire engine arriving. They got the fire engine they couldn't hire, they just got it to show up anyway.
Surely they then would carjack the fire engine and the shot.
So I'm going to suggest Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song as the worst blaxploitation movie ever, just because of the dangers of working on that set.
Yeah.
So our candidates for the title of the world's worst blaxploitation movie are Ben's suggestion of Gay Negroes from Outer Space, the Danish directed blaxploitation film, Masood's suggestion of The Black Gestapo, the film with all the bad guys and no redeeming features, and my suggestion of Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, the 19 days shot feature film where getting gonorrhea was a plus.
And you can see them all at a triple bill at the Prince Charles Cinema. Oh, this Saturday.
Along with The Black Pirate, which we will shoot this afternoon.
We're going to get a pedalo and a pleasure pond in Regent's Park. Right. Oh, what a choice. What a buffet to choose from. The Black Gestapo sounds very convoluted, with very few redeeming features, but it doesn't have the shonky charm of maybe the other two films.
And I think that's why I found it quite bad, because like at least with Gay Negroes from Outer Space and Sweet Sweetback, there is a redeeming feature of like, okay, this is kind of silly.
Yeah.
There's some fun happening here, and it feels like, regardless of it, it at least looked fun to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas The Black Gestapo, just, I felt like even during production, there's this kind of air of nastiness that was happening around there. And also that, like, the film is so convoluted that they literally give up one of the villains halfway through, and then the villains are now the people we're following. And then also that it made me feel like it was a kind of redemption story. That's what annoyed me about it. It's like, how dare you make yourselves a cautionary tale,
Yeah, Ben, Gay Negroes from Outer Space, definitely one of the worst titles before Lesbian Vampire Killers ever to grace cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And also one of the worst plots I think I've ever heard.
Yep.
My thing that I love on this podcast is when we can celebrate heroic failure. Mm-hmm. And there's a heroism in Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song because of
how iconic it was and how well it did at the cinema and how it spawned this massive industry.
Yeah.
But also the failure element of, you know, how dangerous it would have been to work in that atmosphere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I'm going to plump for my own suggestion because, not because it's a terrible film, but because of the workplace practices.
No. That's just the sort of decision that a honky would come up with.
Before we go, I have to tell you about some of the world's worst news of the week. Oh, before I do that, Ben, I've got an update on Nibiru for you.
Another one?
Nibiru, what do you know about the planet Nibiru, which is going to crash into planet Earth and destroy us?
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this.
Yeah. What's Nibiru up to this week?
The Daily Express basically have a page devoted to it now. Nibiru Watch. Christian researcher David Mead says it's going to hit Earth this time, between November and December 20th.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been due and been late several times already this year. But it's definitely happening in the next month.
Is Nibiru
and a half.
Run by British Rail?
Southern Rail.
Southern Rail, definitely.
And the exact spot it's going to hit?
Yeah.
The Atlantic.
What I love...
Or the Indian. Or the Pacific. In fact, the ocean's facing the sun.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that Christian researcher David Mead has seen a map and not a globe.
He's definitely a flat earther as well. Because Nibiru is just going to crash into flat Earth and it'll wrap around it like paper around a rock.
But that's not my worst news of the week. I also found the story of John Edmonds and his wife, Joyce. They're selling their 9-acre Stardust Ranch in Arizona. Priced at around $5 million, something like that. And the reason they're selling it, sometimes you need to sell a house because you need to upgrade for an expanding family, or there's leaky pipes, or you might have troubles with noisy neighbours. And it's kind of the third option for Edmonds, and because he's fed up with the alien attacks that he and his wife keep suffering.
Of course. It's happening all the time.
Apparently,
are they gay Negroes from outer space? They are attacking. Is that what's happening?
They're lovers, not fighters. Apparently, they've suffered countless attacks since 1995, when they first moved in. And he himself, personally, has killed 19 extraterrestrials with his samurai sword in fending them off.
This is a great movie.
It's like the Amityville Horror, but from space.
Yeah. John going to go on trial at any point soon? I mean, that's a lot of aliens.
It's a lot of aliens. And in fact, he's posted a picture on Facebook of a scar, quite a deep-looking scar on his leg, which he said is a wound he sustained in a recent attack, with the caption, "This is why I want to move."
But not a picture of him, like, standing on top of a... And this is probably
a horrible...
He's
too busy. Samurai swords is two-handed. It's very hard to take a selfie while fighting.
Can his wife get out there and get the photos?
She's hiding in the basement, because if they are gay Negroes from outer space, they will destroy
her. They got the ray guns.
The listing agent trying to sell the house, Kimberly Giro of West USA Realty, said, and I quote, "It might take a little creativity to sell it."
Yeah.
And she has also admitted that reaching out to alien believers around the world and spreading the news of the story is probably her best way to sell it, because she's hoping that an enthusiast might purchase it. Before we go, Masood, where can people find out more about you and what you're doing?
You can get me on Instagram, Masood Miles. That's probably the most popular one, apart from my email address, but I'm not going to give that out. That would be weird. I'm at Angel Comedy, as Ben quite so aptly put at the top, at the Bill Murray. I'm there tomorrow. No, yes, tomorrow, which is a Tuesday, so I'm there most Tuesdays, Wednesdays, some weekends. And, you know, I'm just around. I'm just walking around a lot in London. So if you just spot me, just say hello.
He's the guy with wah-wah pedals on his feet.
Yeah. You know, I might be throwing a sucker up against a wall, you know, needing to know where the drugs are, or potentially getting out of fly cars and spitting on graves. So that's what I might be doing.
Very good.
Some of the things I might be up to.
Meanwhile, we're all off to go and shoot the first scene of Black Pirates. Where we all strut the plank. Thank you for listening to Westwood Forward. Goodbye. So, in an exclusive to listeners of the show, I have actually just been diagnosed with syphilis, and so I'm gonna appeal to the Podcasters Guild and see if I can get money, because I have a funny feeling I caught it on the job, Ben.
What? Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't know. Listen, it could have been one of our guests.
No,
who do I spend most of my time with?
It was when we were in that two suit.
Oh, yeah, that's when what happened. Suit. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Oh, God, damn it. Just please stop waving that gun around. I'm feeling uncomfortable enough as it is. Thank you very much, Masood, for doing that and introducing both of us to a world which we knew so little about.
I really want to see Masood on an episode of Celebrity Mastermind answering questions about black exploitation movies and watch John Humphreys try and wave his way around the choice language genre.
Oh, you know what? I mean, if you're listening, Masood, I hope you are. I hope you would listen to this having recorded it. I would totally watch a YouTube series of Masood doing audio commentary on blaxploitation movies.
Mate, I think we've just found our millions. I'm happy to have a producer's credit
Should we fold Worstwood forward and go into our real calling, blaxploitation DVD commentary?
Well, the thing is, considering what my choice was in this episode of Gay Negroes from Outer Space, I feel very much redundant since you and Masood got that covered.
Yes. Well, you know what? We discovered this afterwards, that it's spelt as one word, gay negroes, which is, as we were about to record this, I just looked it up out of interest, and that seems an added level of sort of insult to the whole injury.
Yeah, because the
I regularly call myself a gayman.
That's because you want to get mistaken for the author.
That's true. It's very true. Check out Masood online. Check out us online. We're on Twitter @WorstFoot. On Facebook, Worstfoot Forward. Send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Please, we sit beside the inbox every day wishing for your suggestions of guests and topics, so send them our way. You can follow Ben, if you like, for all the latest stuff on his comedy club and thoughts on the world. Your Twitter is a mix of promoting your show and raving about Brexit at the moment. It's a really pungent, it's a potent blend.
I'm not raving as much about Brexit because I sort of feel there are more qualified people than me who are going to try and not make it happen, and those people are called the Tory Party. I'm more afeard of the ginger honey monster lunatic in the White House and the increasing threat of Polish Nazism.
So for more cracks like that, go check out @BenVanderveld on Twitter. You can also find me @BazMaxDay.
I wrote a really good joke about eyebrows yesterday as well, just to level it out.
I had my most retweeted tweet yesterday. Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a month after this happened when this goes out.
Share with the class.
Yes, but I just said, if the Sun are raging about trans people, if the Sun are raving about drag queens reading stories to children, wait till they find out about Panto.
Nice.
Which I think it's really struck a chord with the nation.
I think so. Admittedly, I think also there might be a few American and Canadian listeners going, I don't know what Panto is.
Yeah, no, it's underwear with an O on it. what else do we have to tell you to do? Oh, yeah. Give us a rating on all the usual places, wherever you listen to the podcast. Click the 5 stars. It's the easiest one to do. It's on the right. We're naturally right-handed. You don't have to go to the left-hand side of that.
Here's the thought, and this is not just for us, for all podcasters. If you're listening to this, you're probably the sort of person who's into podcasts and hopefully someone who likes to support them. How about on your phone in the notes section or on your computer in Word, have a little stock review that you can literally copy, paste, pop in Apple, pop in iTunes or Stitch, which literally says, "This is a great podcast. I love this. It changed my life."
Yeah.
Then hit it. All I'm doing is reducing the amount of time you have to do doing this from a whopping 30 seconds to a very manageable 10 to 15 seconds.
Or, you know, just copy and paste any of the reviews from underneath the bugle or something like that. We won't be fussy. We won't be fussy.
Nope, not at all.
Next week, we've got an excellent guest, a friend of yours, friend of mine, a sketch performer, actor and comedian, the excellent Tom Tuck, and he has joined us to mine his depth of musical knowledge, and we're going to talk about the world's worst greatest hits album. There's some very big name bands, some lesser known bands, and a couple of real hit jobs compiled, so tune in next week to listen to us, you know, pull down some more statues of golden calves.
Yes, on Now That's What I Call Worst Foot Forward.